What's up, guys? I'm Erin Darling Turalva. Welcome to another episode of Hot Pizza Ass. Today, I have Rosie Blair on the show, who is a plus-size lifestyle blogger, social media star, and she's making tons of hilarious videos on TikTok that call out the way that media labeled celebrities and TV characters as fat, who were actually not fat at all. It's a brilliant retrospective. Also, she tells the story about how she went from working in retail to becoming an influencer and how she promotes inclusivity in sizing and why she hates diets. She's so funny and full of energy. I really loved speaking with her. I feel like we connected and had a great talk, and I can't wait to share this episode with you guys. Before we get into the episode, there's a couple of things I just want to talk about. First of all, if you love this podcast, take a second right now to review us on iTunes or to share it with someone who would enjoy this interview. That's how the podcast grows, and it is the quick and easy way to support. If you would like to support financially, and of course there are tiers starting at $5, you can go over to patreon.com/Erin Darling, where you can find Hot Pizza Ass and get some cool bonus content there. Additionally, in this episode, we talk a little bit about Billie Eilish, and there were some really interesting developments that happened this past week with her, so I thought, why not touch base at the beginning of the episode? So in this episode, Rosie and I talk about how Billie Eilish has made this choice to wear baggy clothing, and she is very outspoken about this, and she says it's because she does not want to be basically sexualized by the media. And let's all keep in mind, she's very young, you guys. She's 19 years old. So I always thought that that was a really, really cool choice for her, because we've seen so many pop stars be forced to sexualize themselves at really young ages. Like we saw it happen to Britney. Jessica Simpson talks about it in her book. I'm pretty sure every pop star that's a woman has probably had this experience, you know, with pressure from the label or whatever. And I love the fact that Billie has so much autonomy. Like, she knows who she is and she has made these decisions. And I think it's awesome. And also, she kind of changed culture, because now, you know, she became a trendsetter. People are following her style. She's kind of like a tastemaker. But this week, there are pictures. She's on the cover of British Vogue, and for the first time, she's wearing kind of like pinup clothing, lingerie, and she looks amazing. And she's out here talking about how this is all about what makes you feel good. And apparently she's in, you know, a different phase of her that she's feeling like she wants to show the world. And I think it's so fascinating that that happened this week, because we just happened to talk about it. And A, I think she looks great, but B, I think my fear for this is the fact that people are going to be saying, oh, it's like a whole new Billie Eilish. It's like, no, actually, she has made it very clear, and she's talked about this over and over again, that it's not a new anyone. Like, this is her. She's always had this side to her, obviously. She just chose to keep it private and to not share it with the public. And now everyone's getting that first taste of it. And I can already kind of see the way that the headlines are being written. Like, I have this one right now. I'm looking at a Page Six article that says, every time Billie Eilish ditched her bagging outfits for tight clothes. And it's like, okay. I hope that we as a society can look at all of the ways that we mistreated pop stars, women, celebrities, and held them up to these ridiculous standards, right? And crush them in the media when they didn't fit into what we thought was how they should look, which is insane. Just the idea of like a media company or another person being upset at someone else and bullying them on the internet or on tabloid magazines because they don't look how you think they should look. What? And I just hope that with Billie, we've learned our lesson. And I think someone like Rosie, who is awesome, I loved talking with her, brings up so many good points. And now that people like her, there's a lot of content creators, you know, people kind of like me, there's a lot of thought leaders that are talking about this and that are bringing these issues, you know, to the forefront. And we're centering them because we think it's important to hold, you know, people accountable for what we did in the past. And not that there has to be a witch hunt or like a crazy reckoning or anything like that, but I do think that it's worth saying, hey, that wasn't okay, what we all did to these people. Let's break the cycle, you know, and let's break the cycle even with having expectations in our personal lives of how other people should look. It's insane. So, Billy, you look amazing, always beautiful, beautiful in sweatpants, beautiful in the corset. Let's hope that society, we've all matured and that we will give this talented young 19-year-old her privacy and her space to be what she wants to be and not put expectations on her. Okay. Without further ado, let's get into this episode. Here we are with Rosie Blair.
First of all, I think I found you on TikTok first.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
I mean, your content is so great. And I really love that you're calling attention to especially your series about celebrities who we once thought were fat or the media deemed as fat. Because every time I watch your videos that you do on that subject, I have these memories like, oh yeah, these people were absolutely body shamed. And they're like, I don't even understand why. It's so hard to conceptualize.
It's really shocking to me because I have memories of all of these celebrities. And in my mind, they're all larger. In my mind, I'm like, oh, Jessica Simpson was like a size 20. She wasn't. But like in my mind, I picture them as so much larger than they were. And when I go look, even when like now, because I'm consciously making these videos from the thesis point of these women were smaller than we shamed them for. Mm-hmm. And then I'm even shocked whenever I see the photos myself.
Yeah. Did you read Jessica Simpson's book?
I downloaded the Audible of that. And I think I made it to like two chapters in just because I'm super scatterbrained. Yeah. But if you read that, I think that everyone should get the audiobook because she sings and there's little instrumental talk downs and you just want to hear her drawl the whole time. So I think I'm like maybe four or five chapters in.
Yeah. Hard agree. I also audibled it and it's amazing. And she talks about that, that specific picture and what was happening at the time and where she was and, you know, the fact that she was, I think she says her exact weight and everything at the time. And I remember wow. hearing her say it and I was like, oh my God, what? It just blew my mind to think of the way that she was just like crucified in the press and how mean the press was at the time to women in general.
Just looking back at everything, I feel like we've had a lot of celebrities come out, I think even in this year, and be like, this wasn't cool, this interview that I experienced. I feel like there's a lot of like post, like there's some Letterman interviews that have come out that have really creeped me out and how he treats women. I feel like there was just this horrible culture of gleeful shaming of female celebrities in general. We were watching their every move and they were all very young women. And I think that that's even more dangerous and unhealthy.
I totally agree with you. I've actually been watching old Letterman interviews too. And I'm curious, which ones have you been watching that you thought were the most problematic?
The one that comes out is Paris Hilton. I think that he's pretty unrelenting with her. And there are some questions that she, in their pre-interview, said that she didn't want to answer and they didn't discuss. And he asks them without her consent. And then he pushes her. It's just really uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, I recently watched that and I had my boyfriend watch it too because there was a meme that I found that I thought was so funny. And no, I retweeted it and I put it on my socials and no one thought it was funny, but it was like POV, you're a Paris Hilton hater. And it was like a picture of someone taking no money out of an ATM and a picture of David Letterman. I was like, this is so funny. This is the best like fan tweet ever. And no one else got it. But then I had to explain it to my boyfriend. I was like, no. There was this whole like interview that he did. And we rewatched it together and talked about it and how, oh God, it's just like the way, like you can tell in her face that she's trying her best to be like an affable celebrity, you know, but she's like dying inside. Oh, it's so hard to watch.
It's just so sad to me that these are clearly all these young women. I just don't think they didn't have the media training that they have now. And something that immediately comes to mind just when it comes to PR spins, do you remember the celebrity nudes leak in like 2014?
Who was involved in that? Was this the Vanessa Hudgens era or was
it was Vanessa Hudgens. Yeah, it was a lot of women all at once. There was also like Jennifer Lawrence, for instance. Mm-hmm. So it's really funny to me is that there've been nudes leaks as long as there've been the internet, I'm sure even prior to that. So there was a bunch with Lindsay Lohan exiting cars, Paris exiting cars, Britney, et cetera. And it's funny how we witness those incidents as being indicative of their mental health and just indicative of them being a total mess.
Yeah.
And how when it happened to Jennifer Lawrence, it came out as being something like, if you participated in looking at these photos, you are doing something that they have not consented to and you are now assaulting them. It's just so interesting how like a person like Jennifer Lawrence, who is a lot more lauded in the public eye because she's grown her career through something that the media deems as a little bit more important than kind of being a tabloid celebrity. So her nudes leak, even though it's kind of the same situation with consent, is seen as somehow more of a crime than when we did upskirt photos of Paris and Lindsay.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. And I remember her response and thinking like, wow, that's actually what she's saying is totally right. It's a huge violation of privacy. It doesn't matter how these photos were leaked, but someone violated someone's like privacy, their property, their phone, like they own these images. And if you are looking at them, you are absolutely part of the problem and you're assaulting them too. And I thought, wow, that's so, no, how come no one has said this before?
Like, yes,
exactly what it is. Exactly. And then also kind of say like kind of what you're talking about before, we also tie in morality into, you know, if your nudes are leaked, now it's a moral issue and we can like make a judgment on your character when it's like, wait a second. Like what? Everyone has a nude picture on their phone. Everyone. Now people post them as like workout progress pics or something. You know what I mean? Now it's like,
it's like, is this weird mole on my inner thigh something I should worry about? You know, that's a lot of my nude photos right now.
Yeah. My acupuncturist took one of me yesterday because she's like, you should have your doctor look at this like lump in your back. Like what's going on here?
Yep. Yep. Been there.
Yeah.
But it's so upsetting to me that we didn't afford that same respect and care to the celebrities of the mid 2000s. Just, I think merely because of how they were portrayed in the media as kind of like bimbos, as opposed to someone like Jennifer Lawrence, who is definitely a little bit more of the thinking man's woman.
I love you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hilarious. I like that description of her. But yeah, thank you so much for doing the work that you're doing, because thank God someone's talking about it and using a platform like on TikTok to talk about this, because, you know, I do TikTok stuff too, but I like debunk pop culture conspiracies when I can. Sometimes you can't debunk them and you kind of have to just like trace it back a little bit, but it's such a young audience and a young platform. And I think for someone like you to be having these conversations is really good for like these younger generations to see, oh yeah, like that wasn't cool. And like to get on board and to agree with you. So thank you so much for doing that work.
Thank you. It's work, but it is also fun. I have a lot of fun doing it. These are all like weird thoughts I've had to myself for many years. And it's been really nice and affirming to explore them in front of an audience of people that may not have the same experiences as myself, but have everybody agree for the most part. You know, there's some debate occurring in the comments as you would expect, but overwhelmingly it's been pretty positively received and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. And I want to talk to you about your journey, because one of the videos I saw, you were also talking about, you know, 3 years ago, you decided to become a lifestyle blogger. And before that, you were kind of trying to be an actor and a comedian, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to talk to you about like getting into that space. Like, how did you at the time, like, where were you in your life? And like, what were you thinking to kind of make that shift?
Sure. I feel like acting and being in front of the camera was always a lifelong passion. It's what I trained for. And what's upsetting about that world is that there's so much gatekeeping and so much, so much of the old guard determining whether or not you get to participate. So it's not like a normal career field where if you are talented and you've, you know, paid your dues, you automatically, like, there's more potential for you to get a job. Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like acting, especially in film and TV, is a lot of job interviews over and over pretty consistently. I left the world intentionally just because I was getting really exasperated with the material that I had to look at on a daily basis. It was all so sad, so heartbreaking. Anything that's offered towards a plus size storyline is generally like, I feel so bad about my body and my mom hates me, or why can't I find love? Or maybe being kind of like the brash, sexually abrasive sort of friend in the crew. So I was somewhere between crying or doing like a Rebel Wilson impersonation from Pitch Perfect. And it was just so deeply unsatisfying, deeply one-dimensional that I became super depressed. And every casting workshop I went to, they were like, you need to gain 50 pounds or lose 50 pounds. We have no idea what to do with you. And I heard things like, you're too pretty to be the fat girl, and just awful, weird, unnuanced views of what people who are allowed to tell stories. So I left LA and I moved home to Dallas, Texas to live with my parents. And I started working retail. And I got a position at the store that I was working at to kind of manage the store's Instagram. And I researched a bunch of women on the platform and I saw people that were looking like me. And it was so exciting. And I saw narrative and I saw storytelling. And I was like, oh, I got to be a part of this immediately. And this is how I can change the images that are out there for younger generations, because the only place I could see women was like traditional media. And I saw a very narrow vision of what women were allowed to be. So yeah, it's a very long-winded response, but I think that whenever I sought to make my own media in the lifestyle influencer space, I was absolutely led by the idea to make my own images that I never saw.
I love that. And I think that that's, it's really powerful and it makes a lot of sense. And I also think it's really smart. It's like seeing, you know, something that doesn't really quite exist. And now it's like the last couple of years, really that space has changed. But I think at the time, like looking at the marketplace and just, I always say that everything's advertising, like everything that you see on social media is basically advertising, whether or not people know it. And whether it's a company or a product or a person, everything you see is an ad. And it's like, there was this whole like area missing in that space. So I'm just so glad that you're able to really see that and go for it. Has it been challenging to like, to work in that space?
Yeah, it's had major ups that I couldn't compare to anything. And it's had extremely low lows. I don't have much to compare it to because this is my first public facing career I've ever had. So I have no idea if for some reason, the route I was following earlier it with traditional media, if that had picked up for me, if I would be facing the same amount of scrutiny. The only thing I can say is that I think whenever I hear people that are actors kind of give interviews about scrutiny, they're always like, I just don't look myself up on the internet. I'm always looking myself up on the internet. Like I have a space that people are invited into and they're invited to say anything they want. And I feel that like, there's this culture online of if you put yourself out on the internet, you have to be aware that people are going to comment and that you signed up for this. Like, I really hate that mentality because people don't sign up for abuse. People sign up to share a message with people, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be on the receiving end of hatred.
Right. Totally. Do you receive hatred?
Oh my God. Yes. I have a very robust comment filter on Instagram that has words that you may not even associate with online hate. I feel like it's so funny that a plus size person could post something very innocuous, like a cute Easter dress, and receive violent messages that a standard size counterpart would not receive at all. It's crazy.
What?
Yeah. It's pretty intense.
Oh my God. I'm so sorry to hear that. And so you just basically combat that by putting on strict filters and.
Yes. And it's done wonders for me. I feel like I don't see as much as I would if I wasn't so specific. But I feel like when I was a little younger into the business and a little bit more naive, I didn't have those filters on at all. And I saw some dreadful things.
Yeah. Wow. I'm really, really sorry to hear that. I think that, you know, a lot of people experience stuff like that online, but I mean, you have a big, big following. So
yeah.
I'm sure that it's, you know, the amount that you would receive would be a lot more than, you know, than me per se.
Most people are angels. Happy to say that. But it's funny, like, I think there's a statistic that's like, you need like 20 positive interactions to combat like one negative one. So if I were to get like 3 nasty DMs in a day, it can feel pretty exhausting. I know people that have kind of like an iron will and an iron kind of set of armor, but I know so many people who kind of start out feeling brave about the situation, but at the end of the day, we're all human. And these things, I don't even think we realize how much receiving messages like that can harm you. I just don't think that we as humans weren't meant to have that amount of access to each other. Mm-hmm. Nobody goes out into the town square and has like 1,000 people say things to them. I feel like even having 1,000 people say something positive to you can negatively affect you.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Do you have a system or a way that you kind of like clear space or clear energy? Do you put boundaries or like time limits on any of your apps? Like, how do you deal with that being like a big content creator?
Yeah, I'm still navigating that pretty significantly. But currently, my favorite thing to do is to carve out times of day that I interact with people versus carve out times of day that I'm like creating something. Mm-hmm. So there are some days that I'm not on my phone at all, which is awesome. And I can just take photos or answer emails. And then there are some times where I'm like, okay, this is specifically phone time. And what's great, and I don't think a lot of people know this, is that Instagram now allows you to interact with people through DMs on a desktop. So sometimes I just make sure that I access that part of my platform on the desktop, just so I can keep my phone like as a phone to interact with my friends and family.
That's actually really smart. I like that. I never use IG on the desktop. So
it's a thumb saver. So you'll feel like it's a lot easier to type with people and you can write back a paragraph instead of a little sloppy sentence.
I'm all about like the voice to text life. That's like, I just send like the voiceover real quick. So I can limit my time, but I'm similar in certain ways where I feel like I definitely have to limit the amount of time because the content work can be endless if you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, especially on multiple apps. Like it's just
an exciting career and a completely tiresome one because there's no cap, you know. If you were told, hey, there's no cap to your income and you determine what your salary is, basically, like I feel like everyone would be pulling all-nighters. Yeah. You know, it's definitely, you know, a little carrot dangling in front of you. Because the job is what you make it. And I think that it is so enticing to spend hours upon hours upon hours working on content.
So when you started originally, did you think that, like, were you envisioning this where you're like, okay, I'm going to get to like 200,000 on IG and on TikTok? Like, did you have specific goals for growth and kind of what you wanted it to turn into? Or were you just kind of going with the flow?
There were a lot of things at hand. I think when I first got involved with social media, I was promoting a sketch show that I was working on. So I took an Instagram class and I kind of sort of used my own account as a dummy account. And then I didn't touch it for a few years until I was working that retail gig where I got to, you know, have fun. And I really think, gosh, initially, I think I was using any social media platform to try and do comedy, period. And then when I was working retail, I really enjoyed it as a space to let my creativity flow and to access parts of myself that I had pushed down in the name of being like a cool comedy girl. So I wouldn't allow myself to be hyper feminine or to enjoy shopping and clothes and stuff like that. And it was a really great therapeutic process for me because for so many years, I had pushed down this hyper feminine side of me. And I think that I, as far as like expression goes, I think I accessed it from a really wholesome space of like, I want to share images and create images that I never saw as a kid in case someone else can see them. From a like evil genius business perspective, I was like, oh, maybe I can get some free clothes out of this. I knew that people made money on this platform, but I didn't know that it could be a full career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it turned into that.
Yeah.
So tell me about your last day at the retail job. Like, were you just like, bye, bitches? Like, what was that like?
I, at this point, so I was doing customer service at night for a luxury brand and working where I could, like part-time, retail. The thing that really got me was the customer service. And I tell you, when I, there are some cartoonishly evil, wealthy people in the world. And I met them on the telephone and I was sitting at my desk and I was already stealing time on the clock, working on Instagram while I had like, while I was taking a phone call, I would be using the monitor to like be on Instagram and like posts or engage with people, et cetera. And I think I got off the phone with a person who told me that his watch was worth more than my entire year's salary. And I was like, I'm done. I am so done talking to these people. They're so evil. It's so hard and scary. And it was just verbal abuse from angry men pretty consistently. And I think that watch thing just pushed me over the edge and I hung up the phone. I didn't clock out. I just walked out and I went home to my now fiance, who was my boyfriend at the time. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. If I promise to like treat, you know, social media, like it's my 9 to 5 or 9 to 11 PM, let's be honest, will you help support me? And he did, which I'm so grateful for every day because now he works for me. So I worked hard and I'm just so grateful that he believed in me to the extent that he did. And it's really turned into something really fun for both of us.
That's really great. That's so cool. I mean, yeah, having someone in your life that can see the vision and believe in you to that extent is just incredible. And then it worked out. That's so cool.
I don't like to be like, hey, you got to take the dive before you're prepared to, because I think if I didn't have that whole, oh my God, he's supporting both of us, I don't have a stream of income to contribute, I feel like if I didn't have that fire under my ass, I don't know if it would be what it is today, because I think that I like had to make it work. I don't know that I would suggest other people quitting their jobs, but I don't know. It worked for me.
Yeah, I also worked in luxury retail and I had some really crazy experiences too. So,
oh my God, tell me them. I need to know.
Okay, so this is kind of funny. So you've seen obviously Wolf of Wall Street, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so one time this group of people walked in, but they were all like 20, you know, and it was like two dudes and like their girlfriends or something, like acting like Wolf of Wall Street, but in like a boutique, you know what I'm saying? Like, that and blah, blah, blah. Like this, like trying to buy everything, like acting like the price didn't matter, like the most expensive stuff, but just being super extra about it. And then when they came to pay, I was like helping to ring them up. And like, he was just like, you know, literally talking to me like it was like someone breaking the fourth wall in a movie like that, you know, like, oh my God, isn't it so great? I can just drop like 20 grand in a store, you know, like crypto, like these are like crypto bros. And I just remember thinking, like, I just felt so disgusting because I'm like, I went to a really good school. I have a great education. Like, why am I here? And it wasn't like abuse, but it was like shame. Like I felt shame, like ringing these people up and being treated like I felt like I didn't have an identity. I felt like my identity was the store and that's how they saw me, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is gross. And so that was one of my worst experiences.
God.
And you know, I stayed after that. I like finished that job and I was so ready when that was done to just be like, you know what? I had a kind of a moment like you, but it wasn't like a I'm leaving thing. It was like, I'm finishing this commitment, but I never want to go back to that space, like ever.
I appreciate that you have more of a like respect minded heart than I did.
Oh my God, it wasn't respect. I'm out. No, it was money. I was like, I need the money. I need to be able to pay my rent. I have this expense and this expense. I just like bought a new car, like all of this stuff. I was like, no, I can't quit yet. But I wanted to.
One of my managers, the story sticks with me forever. And she worked at one of our stores in Vegas. And she told me that a woman spat on her when she told her that they were out of whatever handbag that she had come in for. I feel like there is something about luxury retail that just invites bad behavior. Because I feel like there must be some like group of people that couldn't shop there before and then suddenly can and like have this entitlement or this, I have no idea. But I worked so much retail over the course of my life. It was always my day job. It was always my like go-to and it was fun for me. And I found that I had a natural aptitude for it, but I have met some of the most terrifying people working retail.
Yeah. I think working in retail is kind of like, you know, like in LA, I think it's kind of one of those things where it's like working at the bar is like what every actor does kind of, you know, and it's like, that's kind of like in a certain way, it's kind of similar to retail, but I think retail is kind of what people do in other cities. I've done both. I've worked in bars and I've done retail, but it's like everyone has like one of those awful job stories. And I feel like it's normally bar or retail.
Yeah. It's got to be one of the two. I think that there's something that like people are either drunk or they got that shopper's high and something comes out.
The monster from within.
Is just like,
hello.
Absolutely.
That's so funny. Well, I'm glad that we can commiserate on that. And I'm glad that we're both not in that situation anymore. Yeah. I feel like one of the things that's interesting about retail, though, is I feel like when you work in those spaces, you kind of get like whether or not your job is in merchandising or like styling, it's like you kind of get like an idea of like a visual presentation. Do you feel like that kind of helped you? Like you took it with you into what you do now?
100%. And I feel like the people that I always advocate, like you should get on Instagram or you should get on TikTok because I feel like it's the exact skill set that you need for pursuing a career, especially something in the fashion or lifestyle space, just because I feel like I do what I did at my old job, but I just have better hours and more autonomy. Mm-hmm. So I see like I get to be a buyer, I get to be an advertiser, I get to be a stylist, I get to be a creative director, and I get to be HR. So there's a lot going on. But I feel like whenever I meet other people in the influencer space who have a retail background, I immediately connect with them because I'm like, okay, I have an idea of how you probably run your business. And I feel like we're coming from the same space because there's definitely a group of people that like to, they just want to be celebrities and see social media as a way to be a celebrity. But I know that there's a lot of us who see what we do as kind of a small business or running like a boutique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Is that kind of how you approach your posts and your outfits?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think that I just love consuming the type of media that I make. And I love having conversations similar to the kind of media I make. I feel like I'm always like, what's inside your purse? What do you have? Like, do you have any tips? What do you do that I don't do? It's always fascinating to me. I feel like I talk to people or interact with people like I'm reading a magazine. So it's always like, oh, you're so interesting to me. What's your foundation you're wearing? What's your hairspray? And I feel like whenever I go to someone's house, I am confessedly, I've been a snooper. I've been a bathroom mirror opener, but I'm not looking for your pills, boo. I just want to know what your moisturizer is. You know, like that's,
yes, I'm snooping. The same way. I love that. I want to see the perfume. I'm like, what perfume? But like, and some people, like, I don't go through drawers, but people have like, I'm the same way. Like I have like, you know, my perfumes and my lotions are out and my dry shampoos and stuff. And it's like, you know, I like to see what people use and what candles they have.
Yeah. I love stuff.
It's the best. It's the best. What do you think the secret is to putting together a great outfit?
Oh my gosh. Well, from the world of retail school, I think you should always have a third piece, because there's something about having that third piece that's important. And then I really like some kind of consistent accessory that feels bespoke and special to you specifically, and that people can associate it with you. So I really like initial necklaces, and I feel like I always like to wear one because it feels very personal to me. And I always like when someone has something identifying, and that probably goes back to everybody's obsession with Sex and the City and the early 2000s and the Carrie necklace, mm-hmm. you know? And you always saw her with her Carrie necklace. It was such a great identifier. So I always love when people have some very personal token.
Yeah, I like that too. I think that's it's also a great gift to give someone. Mm. If there's any dudes listening that's trying to don't know what to get, you know, your girl or your mom on Mother's Day, you know.
Nameplate necklace. Initial necklace.
Those are all great gifts. That one's really pretty. What are you wearing right now? What is this?
She's an Amazon one.
Oh, she's nice.
Amazon necklace. I've had some good luck with Amazon jewelry lately.
Yeah, there's some really great ones. And there's some ones that's like, oh, I did not. I need to stop ordering Amazon jewelry. Like,
yeah.
It's like falling apart.
Yeah. I've had like column A, column B. I feel like there are a few that I've had massive success with, but the majority have not been great. But you got to weed through it, I guess.
Yeah, it's a gamble. Just know it's mm-hmm. a gamble, you know?
Absolutely.
As long as you have that idea going in, I think, and like, I kind of have this limit. It's like, I'm not going to spend more than like $25 on a piece of Amazon jewelry. So if I'm like completely disappointed by it, I'm just like, well, you know, whatever, I get what I pay for, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Two or three times and chalk it up to a bad decision. But if it works out, it's like, yes, I paid $25 to this. I'm going to wear it all the time. You cannot lose. When you started creating content and like putting together like your whole, basically what ended up becoming your business, who did you look up to? Like, did you have people in the space that you're like, okay, this is exactly what I want to be doing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that there's like people on a large scale and then people that have now become peers of mine, which has been really exciting. So on a larger scale, I love people like Joanna Gaines, you know, because that I still see that as something that is kind of connected to what people in my industry do, because she's built a massive business around her personal taste, her personal interest. And I feel like it's also like a Texas thing too. I feel like everybody knows Joanna Gaines. She used to come to our store when I worked at an Anthropology in Dallas. She'd always come with her personal assistant. We would all run out of the fitting room, look at her and like be so excited. And I feel like I've always admired people that realize that what they have to offer the world is interesting to other people. Cause I feel like that's the same for so many other people. I feel like most people I encounter are interesting to me because I'm not them. And I just wish that everyone had this, like, I wish everyone had a blog. I wish everyone shared what makes them unique, what makes them and things that they enjoy and like. And I think the people that have capitalized on that and made that their career must be so happy because they just get to share things that they love. Mm-hmm. So I really like Joanna Gaines. And then when it comes to Instagram, I was a huge fan of Noelle Downing, and I've respected the way she's done her business so much over the years. She is in the body positive space, and I think she's also just like one of the best people out there when it comes to full lifestyle influencing. So I think it's interesting that I care about her dog, that I care about her home, that I care about how she's going to decorate for Halloween, but also I love her bathing suit. I love her jeans. Like, I think it's fascinating that so many women have gained confidence in themselves enough to say, hey, what my life looks like is interesting and of value, and I want to show it off to people.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about that in your journey. I feel like, cause that's so connected to, I think, self-love and self-acceptance, mm-hmm. because a lot of people aren't confident enough to think that people care. And mm-hmm. I'm curious to see like how you got there. Were you always confident? And like, how did you decide like, yes, I'm like, I am worthy of, you know,
showing the world all of my like, my tastes, like the colors I like my, this is my life and I'm going to sell it.
Yeah. I said something when I answered your last question about, there's a phrase that I learned doing improv comedy and it's, you are not interesting. Oh no, sorry. Let me rephrase that. You are interesting to me because I am not you. And I feel like you can reverse that thought and put it on yourself and say, oh, I'm interesting because no one's me and they don't know what I'm going to do next. And they don't know what's in my head and they don't know what I like and love, et cetera. And for me, my confidence in life and who I am as a person came in college when I started doing improv comedy, because I feel like being in that atmosphere. So when you take an improv class, one of the first rules you learn is to agree with a scene partner. And so anything they say is gold. It's not bad. It's not judged. So I think being in an environment where things that you say aren't judged really empowered me a lot. And I feel like that's not the answer that everyone wants to hear when it comes to a confidence journey, because I feel like everyone's like, oh, I just wanted to wear a bathing suit. So I wore a bikini on the beach. And now I'm confident. I feel like confidence comes so much more from being aware that what you stand for matters and your existence matters and that you have a voice and that your story is important. And I think that I learned that by performing improv comedy, because it was so, when you perform improv comedy, it's just two people on a stage and you don't have anything other than the two of you. And so immediately anything that you've had, your past experiences, your opinions on things, any kind of knowledge you have on any subject immediately becomes valuable to what you're trying to execute on stage. Mm-hmm. So I think that doing comedy and kind of basing my young life around that, because all I wanted to do was like succeed in the comedy world, really hinged on that. And I could pinpoint like the type of person I was prior to that and the type of person I was after that.
That's so interesting that you said that, because I mean, for me, I mean, improv terrifies me. I've done it unsuccessfully. But as a stand-up, I've always felt that I had something to share. Like, and as a writer, I've always been like confident that I have like a story or I have good ideas. And I feel like a lot of people that came to entertainment have always kind of known that about themselves, you know, in one way or another. That's like, yeah, I have a story that other people would pay money to experience or to watch. And that's kind of, it's interesting that you said that, because I was like, oh, I feel like there's so many people, actually probably more than I'm realizing, that probably really do believe in themselves.
Yeah.
I think doing a podcast like Hot Pizza Ass, I've learned that like there's so many people that struggle on a daily basis, but there's so many people that also like really know, like, yeah, I am this. But I think also there's like a day-to-day struggle too that happens with just being a human. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you compare yourself to other people a lot?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just did something with a group of girls recently. So reels are really big on Instagram because hot insider tip, Instagram wants to be TikTok because TikTok is killing it. Mm-hmm. So Instagram introduced reels. And because of that, anytime you make a reel, Instagram automatically kind of pushes it more than a standard image post. So some girlfriends of mine and I were like, okay, we're going to do 30 days of just reels doing our same lifestyle content, but we're going to make it reels. And I definitely did it for what I would consider the wrong reasons, to quote the Bachelor franchise. Because I definitely wanted my work to be seen by more. I felt like there was kind of a lurch in my growth. And I just was like, what's going on? I need to do something. So I was already coming at it from a perspective of like, I'm just doing this for the gains, baby. I'm not doing this because it's something I authentically love. And I feel like people can smell that miles away. And I even felt like, this looks phoned in. You can see the dull lifelessness in my eyes in all of these videos. I'm not having fun doing this. So I think I stopped around like day 8, day 10, something like that. And I was like, I'm going to do 30, but I was just not having fun. I wasn't growing. I was just like, what is the point of this? And additionally, like, you know, we've been talking about body image, et cetera. There's something about a 30-day challenge that immediately takes me back to like, I don't know, like a workout challenge or like a diet challenge. That's a 30-day thing. And I had the same kind of internal feelings of like, I'm doing something I freaking hate right now. Mm-hmm. Why am I doing it?
So, yeah. I love how in it's your TikTok bio, I think, where it's like X diets. And I'm like, yes, I like how it's just in your bio, just like, yeah, fuck diets. Like, no, I'm kind of the same way. Cause I think like not growing up. I always think that's a weird word to say, because it's not like I was a child entertainer, but I think, you know, being in my developmental young years, wanting to do entertainment and being, you know, getting opportunities to, I felt like I was always supposed to be on a diet, or I was always supposed to at least be trying to lose like 10 pounds here or there, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Did you feel like that in LA? And what's it like now that you're out of LA and you're in Texas? Do you feel like, is the culture a little bit different? Do you still feel any of the pressure?
It's so weird, because like in LA, I got laid more than I did in Texas. So I think that's really funny. I think that it's really weird. Texas, I'm in Dallas. So that's its own specific kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So one of the first conversations I had in LA was, I actually worked for, this is going to date me, but when I worked in Dallas, I was working at Juicy Couture, and then they transferred me, or attempted to transfer me, to an LA location. And I showed up to work and they had no idea that I was working there. I feel like they didn't want me to work there. And I was like, okay, well then I'd like to interview for any open positions then, since I'm here. And I got taken up to an office at the Beverly Hills location. And the manager was like, who do you think the Juicy Couture woman is? And I, you know, gave very substantial information about the demographic, about what she likes to spend, what she likes to do in her free time. And she was like, no, you see, I think that the Juicy Couture woman likes to drink green smoothies and likes to do yoga or Pilates. And I think that she cares about her body. What do you think about that? And I was like, just confounded, because I had never been so passive aggressively, I don't know what, assaulted like that. It was so clear to me like what she was getting at. And I just excused myself. I was like, oh, okay. And to me, like, LA culture is bizarre, because in like the retail world, I felt more scrutinized and treated poorly. But insofar as like professionally what I was trying to do, I got called into rooms. I got really far down the line of auditioning. People wanted to see different voices. I think people working in casting are good, earnest people who want diversity to happen. Mm-hmm. I think that there's something going on higher up that's preventing that from occurring. But I think that the casting directors I worked with on a frequent basis were really wonderful people. And I see the work that they continue to do now. And I think that they're finally breaking through a little bit. But no, I think LA is such a weird, weird place, because in retail situations, people are assholes. Mm-hmm. But like I said before, I got hella laid in LA. And I feel like it was because I was some kind of exotic bird that they hadn't seen before.
Or just because you're hot. I mean,
and that too. Yeah, that too.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah,
but I had really bad bangs, so I don't know.
You had bad bangs? I think we all went through that phase.
the baby bang. Yeah, I think everyone tries a baby bang once.
So vintage. What was your aesthetic back then? Was it like, I feel like that's like hipster East Side, like baby bang, or it's either you're going like for a pinup like look.
Oh yeah. I definitely wanted to be seen as edgy. But I'm very wholesome looking in a casting office. So I think the first thing I did when I moved out to LA was I went to like a casting workshop where they typed you. Cause I was like, I gotta know, I have to have some self-awareness. And they were like, well, what do you think your type is? And I was like, edgy, bad girl, like, you know, Drew Barrymore and Charlie's Angels, something like that. And they were like, well, we think Girl Next Door, Big Sister, responsible college student. And I was like, so angry about this. Cause I thought I was like Daddy's Little Nightmare or something like that. So I like went home, dyed my hair black, and like cut little Betty Page bangs. And I was like, someone's going to notice this. Someone's going to know who I am inside. And I just don't think it. I think I'm just too like sweet looking. I don't know.
LA is so weird. Are you happy? Are you happier in Dallas?
I am. I mean, I miss the geographic splendor of Los Angeles so much because I love, you know, everything that you have access to. I don't know. It's kind of weird. I really miss the diversity of a coastal city because in Texas, it's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And, but then, you know, there's moments where I go to LA and I meet some gregarious personalities and it definitely puts me off a little bit. So, but who knows what the future holds?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like, what do you want to do? Like, what's your next step? Like, do you want to do Joanna Gaines? Or like, I could see you writing a book. Like, I would read your book. I would.
Thank you.
Like, what do you think the next thing is for you?
My God, that's a great question. I ask myself pretty consistently. Whenever I try to write, I go to the dark side of my brain too much. And I just feel like if I'm going to write a book, I literally need to sit down and like talk into a tape recorder because I don't think it's going to happen me sitting at a laptop because it's going to turn way too sad and depressing. And I don't know why that comes out when I try to write, probably because I associate writing with doing my morning pages and my therapy writing. So I think that's what's popping out. To be honest, the thing I keep saying to my fiance is I'm like, I just want to be a mom on a sitcom. I always have the acting bug still inside me and I don't like to make huge declarations. I kind of just want to see like where life takes me, as cheesy and granola and crunchy as that sounds, but it's been really affirming to the performer in me to see what TikTok is doing for me. And so I feel like maybe this isn't something that I've said goodbye to. Maybe performing is something that is on the back burner. I love what I do on Instagram. I feel like Instagram is a day job for me, as crazy as that sounds, because I know it's so many people's dream job. But at the point that I'm at now, it feels very like I clock hours, I have a routine. It's creatively satisfying to a point, but I feel like I am still missing something creative for my life. And currently, TikTok is filling that void. I haven't monetized that platform for that very reason. I'm not doing sponsored posts on TikTok, even though it's a little bit alluring. I still want to keep it as my happy space.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally feel you on that. Yeah. And also, I feel like sometimes the weird, like the TikTok marketplace is always like, what? Like, you know, this doesn't make sense. Why? How? Like, I don't know if you've had that experience, but I've had some weird companies like contact us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't even understand how I would sell this, like a ticketing app. I'm like, well, no, I'm like debunking pop culture conspiracies. Like, I don't know how you want me to make an ad around this.
People want me to dye my hair all the time. I feel like on TikTok, they're like, it's like Overtone is always like, do you want to dye your hair pink? And I'm like, no, I'd be too much for this pretty blonde hair. I don't want to do that.
No, thank you.
And I feel like people, it's really strange to me. Just like, you know, let's talk shop a little bit. I don't understand how I have a significant more amount of followers on TikTok and the content I make gets so much more views. But I think that the current value of a sponsored post is so much lower than Instagram right now. And I don't know if that's because advertisers understand that maybe there's an opportunity to prey on people who don't understand the value of social media. Mm-hmm. Could be that. Maybe. Because it's bizarre to me that people are like, well, you have 200,000 followers on TikTok and your video views are in the millions, but we think that a partnership with you is valued at like $400, which is goofy mm-hmm. to me. And absolutely. I think there's going to be a lot of, they probably haven't had the great renaissance of sponsored content on TikTok, probably because there isn't a direct to action thing that a consumer can do. So there's a swipe up feature. Maybe that's why it's devalued. I don't know. I'm interested to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah. You know, what's kind of interesting is because like I work a lot doing influencer partnerships and I do some, you know, social media consulting on top of my own stuff. So I've been on both ends. And wow. I think, you know, what is really interesting is exactly what you're saying. I think that people on TikTok blow up really quick. And I think that there's there's just a complete disconnect of what someone is worth in their socials. Meanwhile, you have like mommy bloggers who are charging like $4,000 for like
a
email post on IG. And it's, I think that Instagram has just kind of done a better job. And like, I like the platform less now, but Instagram has done a better job of turning it into a sales platform.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a completely different space than what it was even 2 years ago, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. And it turns me off because I'm someone that's so skeptical about advertising and like messaging. Mm-hmm. And I try to do my best to like just the way I try to control my feed is just by unfollowing people that I think are like doing constant sales stuff and in alignment with brands that I think are just not like they're not promoting inclusivity or diversity or they don't care. And I don't really want to see that. And I don't want to feel like I'm okay accepting your ad. Like I'll watch your ad. I'll look at your posts where you're selling stuff. If I feel like, okay, I get it. And like, yeah, that's a great cause, or this is promoting sustainability, or, you know, it's just, I don't know. I'm really careful, I think, with the people that I follow, which is why I was really excited to find you. Cause I was like, oh my gosh, this girl is so great. I love her.
Thank you. I mean, I feel like TikTok, I don't know if you feel like this, but TikTok to me feels like the platform that I can undo the button on my jeans. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm super professional elsewhere. And I feel like if you had found me on Instagram, you probably wouldn't have that same perception of me. And it's because like on TikTok, I feel like I can go be a turd. Like, I feel like I'm not being watched with the same amount of scrutiny. And just the way that you receive feedback from an audience on that platform, I feel like things don't stick with me as long as they do on Instagram. There's something about that feed of comments that I'm like, I don't even know what she said. Who is that? What? I didn't see this. It's just so much different than Instagram, where I feel like I see every single comment. I see every single DM. I am not that way on TikTok. I just go there. I have fun and I see what, you know, I'm throwing spaghetti against the wall kind of a thing. Do you feel the same way?
Absolutely feel the same way. And I think it's kind of fun like that, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I do think sometimes what's your experience like being bullied on TikTok? Because like I get bullied on TikTok and I'm like, dude, why? These are like 12-year-olds. Like at least if I'm getting bullied on Instagram, it's normally like someone my age. Like,
yeah. It's so weird because I really appreciate the audience on TikTok for this exact reason that I'm going to bring up. So I took down a video recently that's in the series. I did one on Billie Eilish. And I sometimes in my videos, I know the answer to a question, but I still pose a question to create discourse in the comments. And I think I brought up the fact that, you know, Billie wears oversized clothing because she doesn't want the media to scrutinize her body. Mm-hmm. And I said to my audience, I was like, why do you guys think this? Do you think that that's authentic? Do you think that she is wearing baggy clothing to hide her body from scrutiny? Or do you think it's kind of one of those Jonas Brothers purity ring things where it's like, because we can't see it, we're expecting it to come out later when she is ready to show off her body? Because I feel like I don't trust anything at this point. I think everything's a PR move, mm-hmm. but she does seem like a very autonomous young woman who would make a decision like that. So I pose this question and I love that my audience is so forward thinking and is so liberal and is so progressive, et cetera. And they were like, how dare you talk about her body? She's a child. And oh, they were like, you're the one who's sexualizing her. She said in many interviews that she's wearing this so she wouldn't get fat shamed or whatever. And I'm like, you guys, I'm just like trying to invite some kind of conversation. But then I was like, you know what? Maybe I am kind of the villain here. Maybe I'm doing the exact thing that I, you know, hate David Letterman for. Who knows? So it's sort of weird. It's like, are these people checking me fairly, or are they, you know, 18-year-olds who just had their first women's studies course and think that everything is a violent attack on them? Because I was that person too.
That's such a great question. Yeah. I've had to on TikTok, I've had similar experiences where I feel like I've had to kind of like question like, oh, wait, am I in the wrong here? Like, for example, when we were first getting our page started and like our growth was like explosive at first. And, you know, we would just like spaghetti against the wallet. We would just try different types of contents, me and another comedian that do these videos. And I remember I was like, well, maybe I need to start making content about like people who are big on the platform. So, and because we debunk rumors, I was told that there was a rumor that the D'Amelio sisters were actually twins.
Mm.
And so I made a really dumb video that was like, it was so tongue in cheek. And it was obvious. I was like, are they twins or are they sisters? Twins would take pictures like this, but sisters wouldn't, which is because sisters are twins.
Yeah.
So I thought I was just being like a stupid comedian, you know, and the video is not mean. It doesn't attack anyone, but it's just like examining the rumor for how dumb it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it got flagged.
Wow.
And yeah. And it didn't happen until our account got bigger and people went back in the content. But, you know, like when your music or your audio is out on your video,
mm-hmm.
like someone reported this, like probably is bullying. And I remember thinking like, okay, I mean, obviously I'm going to delete this video because it was at the very beginning. It was very dumb and it wasn't, I'm not debunking uh-huh. anything. But at the same time, it's a good question because I was like, well, you know, obviously the people on TikTok are very savvy and they like to, you know, they police the people that they, you know, content creators that they think are negative or mean, like they're not going to be on that platform. Like they will kick you off. Like, so you can't like, and I was like, I really wasn't being negative or mean, but just the fact that I was like, even talking about that. And
it's wild.
It's so weird. I feel like I'm learning every single day.
I mean, it's great. I feel like we need that. I feel like bullying is so terrible, especially online, but I do feel like it's a little trigger happy on that platform for sure. Yep. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder about like, I think that our generation, I'm assuming you're a millennial.
yeah.
I feel like the comedy that our generation grew up with, especially during our formative adolescent years, was so mean-spirited, so shock value oriented that I think that so many of us are just getting put in our places. Cause I definitely, my early videos, which I have retired, were a little bit more mean-spirited, were a little bit more snarky. And it's just like, this doesn't fly anymore. We don't talk like this. Even if it's, we're punching up and we're going after the bad guy, I feel like people just don't take it. And I think that that's great overall, but it's something that we have to get used to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you have any pieces of advice that you would give maybe a younger content creator or maybe even you when you were kind of starting this journey?
I would say if you're, so I'll do both. I'll do something that's more for people that are in the comedy sphere and more for people that are kind of in the lifestyle fashion sphere. So for comedy people, I feel like you don't need to shock to get a laugh. The things that I've done that have always been the funniest that have landed have just been observational or calling out something that I thought was very specific to myself, but as it turns out, this is an experience that a lot of people have. So you don't need to be fully blue. You don't need to be fully, I don't know. I said things that were really abrasive that I thought was like, oh man, nobody has said this shit on stage before. I'm a bad bitch. And it just didn't land. And I think I even, you know, put myself into situations that I didn't want to be in on stage because of that, that I was like, oh my God, why did I say that? Why did I confess that?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to shock people. It's not necessary. And then I think for people in the influencer lifestyle space is like, there's a lot of scrutiny on influencers and there's a lot of like, I think because it is a largely female industry, I think that people write it off as being vapid or being super consumer focused, being super, like I said, like vapid. And I think that the job is what you make it. So I think that going into it, you should have a really big reason for putting yourself out there. Because if you don't have that, it's a slippery slope. Like I said, it's not a capped income. You have so many amazing possibilities with your income, but you could turn into a charlatan who's schlepping, you know, hair gummies. Mm-hmm. Or you could be, you know, think about what the advocacy is that you want to do. Think about the message you want to spread and have that be your anchor.
That's such great advice. And, you know, I see that in the content that you create.
Thank you.
Yeah. So way to go. I mean,
I have my days. I mean, I want you to shop with me. You know what I mean? It's a weird balance. It's like, I want to empower you, but I also want you to check out these shoes. You know, like it's a weird dance and you have to be honest with yourself and you have to be still, but also like, I don't like to get too serious, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a really good approach to take.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, and thank you so much for doing the podcast. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad we got to do this.
I'm so glad you had me on. I think this is my first podcast interview for, yeah. You're my first.
Oh my gosh.
At least I think my last one was like 7 years ago, but for like comedy, you know, guesting on each other's comedy podcast, but this is my first like associated with my career. So that's really exciting.
Wow. That is exciting. And I really do appreciate you sharing some of your insight and your tips and your secrets and your story to where you are today. And I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it.
I had so much fun. Thank you for having me.
Thank you guys so much for joining us on another episode of Hot Pizza Ass. I would love to thank Rosie, who was wonderful to speak to and lots of fun. You guys, please follow her on social media. She is Rosie Beam on all the platforms. And check out the show notes where you can see her specific links and follow and support her. To support the podcast, go to patreon.com/erindarling, where you can get bonuses every single month and interact with the cool community there. And if you guys would like to use my discount code, feel free to use darling30 for 30% off your order at ease.com. Support female made brands. That's all for now. I will see you guys soon. Rate, subscribe, send to a friend. Bye.